Today on Straight Talk Africa, the Republic of Benin elects a new president. This through an election whose results reflect the will of its people. Hence, observers say Sunday's poll reinforces the West African nation's reputation as a model of democracy on the continent. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, March 23rd. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, hello to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about the significance of Sunday's Benin's presidential runoff. Could this be the beacon of hope for African democracy?
Well, coming up later in our SCA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on the West African nation's election results. That's through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. That's ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
Across Africa, millions of voters went to the polls Sunday to elect presidents, members of parliaments, and in the case of Senegal, vote on a referendum to determine the length of a presidential term. My colleague, Vincent Macaulay, host of Africa 54, has more.
In Benin, Prime Minister Lionel Sinzo conceded defeat to businessman Patrice Talon in a second-round runoff presidential vote after neither won an outright majority in the first round of voting on March the 6th. Sinzo, a former economist and investment banker backed by outgoing President Thomas Boni Yayi and the main opposition Democratic Renewal Party, was an early front-runner in the election after winning the first round of voting. President-elect Patrice Talon is a well-known entrepreneur who made his money in the key sector of cotton and running Cotonou's port. He's one of the most powerful figures in Beninese business. In 2012, he was accused of being the brains behind a bizarre alleged plot to poison the president, then the following year of attempting to endanger the security of the state. At the time, Talon was being prosecuted in several embezzlement cases and fled the country. Boni Yayi pardoned him in May 2014, paving the way for his return and his run for the presidency. Voters in Niger cast ballots in the country's first ever presidential runoff Sunday, with incumbent Mahamadou Issoufou on track for a second term as the opposition observed a boycott. The 64-year-old Issoufou, a former mining engineer, was facing his main challenger, jailed opposition leader Hama Amadou, 66. Amadou had been forced to campaign from behind bars after being detained on November 14th on baby trafficking charges that he says are bogus and were aimed at keeping out of the race. Just days before the vote, he was evacuated from prison and flown to Paris for medical treatment, with the government saying he was suffering from an unspecified chronic ailment. Issoufou, who is running for a second time in office, took a solid lead with 48.4% in the initial vote on February 21st, way ahead of Amadou, who scored 17.7%. During the campaign, Issoufou, who took office in 2011, repeatedly pledged to bring peace and prosperity to the desolate but uranium-rich country.
5 years, a single term, is not enough to overcome challenges, in particular the security challenges. Do not forget that a few days ago we were the victim of a double attack.
In the Republic of Congo, Sunday's voting was held under immediate blackout. The government says it ordered mobile phone and internet services cut for the day across the oil-producing Central African country for reasons of security and public tranquility. It also banned motor vehicle use nationwide. Despite protests in which at least 18 demonstrators died, Sassou Nguesso pushed through constitutional changes in October to remove term and age limits that would have prevented him from standing again. The government rejected opposition accusations it was preparing to cheat, claiming its opponents were laying the groundwork for post-election chaos. In East Africa, the ruling party candidate in Tanzania's semi-autonomous Zanzibar was declared the winner in Sunday's rerun of presidential elections, boycotted by the opposition. The incumbent Zanzibar President Ali Mohamed Shein of the national ruling CCM Party won 91.4% of the votes in Sunday's ballot. In October, the Zanzibar Electoral Commission called for a rerun, citing fraud, a charge the opposition says was made up. Opposition CAF leader Saif Sharif Hamadi has lost four previous elections since 1995 by a narrow margin. In Senegal, turnout was low for Sunday's controversial referendum on sweeping constitutional reforms, which include cutting the presidential term from 7 to 5 years. Political opponents call on people to vote no in protest against President Macky Sall. Many say he has failed to deliver on his campaign promises, including creating jobs for the young, boosting the economy, and rooting out corruption.
Thanks, Vincent, for that interesting report. And joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests, Ramin Zosongbo, founder of the African Immigrant Organization, and Christopher Fomenyo, senior associate and regional director for Central and West Africa at the National Democratic Institute. Well, I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa again.
Our pleasure. Thank you for having us here.
You're most welcome.
It's a real pleasure to be with you, as always.
You're most welcome, of course. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, my friend Ramin. Your reaction to the presidential runoff in your country?
I am just so proud of my country, mates. I'm so proud of my country, the leaders. And I would say, you know, we set up the example for all the other African countries, as you can see.
Did you vote for the right candidate, or did your candidate win?
My candidate won. Yes.
Really?
Won. Yes.
And where did you actually vote? Where did you cast your vote from?
Well, I was able to vote at the embassy here at Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to go back, but I have other things going on. So I stay here, and I was able to vote at the embassy.
You actually mean that the Benin diaspora has the right to exercise
its
vote?
Yes. Benin
beyond
diaspora,
its boundaries.
Yes. Benin diaspora was very privileged to have the opportunity to go and cast their vote at the embassy, unlike many other countries. But hopefully, many of those countries also will take on that example and move forward in that direction and let the diaspora to have a voice also in the election.
Very interesting. What about you, Chris? Are you surprised by the results in Benin?
No, I really am not surprised. And I would say that since Sunday, I've been talking to my Beninese brothers and sisters and congratulating them for what they've done for themselves, for their country, but also for our continent, because for once we're talking about an African successful election, an election in which there's been a peaceful turnover of political power, in which the population really came out and voted, and in which the Election Commission, 24 hours after voting, released the results, and everybody has accepted the outcome. So I think, once again, as happened in the 90s, Benin is coming out to be a trailblazer of democratic governance and openness on the African continent, and the Beninese should be very proud of that.
Correct. Would it be accurate to characterize it perhaps as the beacon of hope for African democracy?
Yes. You know, generally, sometimes people think that it's the big countries that have so much sway and that must then influence developments on the continent. But Benin, Senegal, Botswana, Cape Verde, you know, these are small-sized countries that are really sending out a message that small countries can also influence big countries. And I think that Benin is really playing a lead role with regards to democracy on our continent.
You might, in fact, add Mauritius, perhaps.
Mauritius is one of those countries as well. Yeah.
Now, I know that you often send a delegation of observers to countries on the continent. Any particular reason, from what I hear, that you didn't actually think that you had to send a delegation of observers to Benin this time around?
Yes, I should say that we did not send observers to Benin this time around, and I'm really pleased that we didn't, because the Beninese have proven to us time and over again that they don't necessarily need the international community watching over their shoulders. You know, the Beninese civil society organizations were able to mobilize the national observers. They had over 3,000 national observers. There was a coalition of over 20 civil society organizations that came together and deployed observers across the entire country. And they did very well in monitoring their elections. And we shouldn't forget that in the past 20 years, Benin has had four heads of states that have been democratically elected. So elections are becoming a routine exercise in Benin. And that's really the way that it should be across all of Africa.
It is very interesting, in fact, that in that particular sub-region, you seem to be developing a positive disease. That is, of course, of an incumbent president, for example, like Nigeria, losing an election, conceding defeat with grace. And in this particular case, you have the prime minister, Lionel Zinsou, actually losing the second round, calling the victor, Patrice Talon, to concede defeat with grace, even before, in fact, the votes are counted.
Yeah, I should say that West Africa is having a facelift in that regard. And it's setting a wonderful example because we've seen that now in Benin. We saw that in Nigeria last year. We saw that in Mali. And increasingly, it's becoming the norm that leaders, when they lose elections in West Africa, call up their opposition and congratulate them. And I think that's a very healthy thing for our democracy. Our hope is that other parts of the continent, other countries across the continent can see this and realize that it's life after an election and that you could be the prime minister, you could have the support of the incumbent president, the incumbent speaker of the National Assembly, and still lose to the opposition and have the grace to call them and congratulate them, because ultimately it's the entire country that should benefit from an electoral exercise. And I think Benin is coming out of this with its democracy really strengthened.
Ramine, what would you say is the secret behind the success, really, of democracy in Benin?
I believe Benin has been a country that has had some difficult moments. But by the time when they decided that they wanted to move toward democracy, I think the whole population was just ready for that, to go for successful and peaceful elections going forward. But I would say the main reason is the media. Mm-hmm. We have the freedom of media.
One of the freest medias, in fact, not only on the continent, but in the world.
In the world, yes. Mm-hmm. We have a freedom of media, and people don't cut they're not asked to cut the cell phone use or text messaging or WhatsApp and all, internet connection.
Like
Congo Brazzaville.
Like happened in Uganda, my country.
Of course. I mean, in many of those countries where the voters are not allowed during that specific period to use the internet connection or to use the media, which is, I believe that it's wrong for many African countries to still be doing that while they call themselves democratic countries. And Benin has not allowed that. I think.
What do you think is the reason for some of those countries, if not, in fact, the majority of them, actually preventing people from going with their phones to the polling stations? Why?
Well, you know what? This actually was an attempt in Benin. And the population, the civil society groups, and the media, they rise up right away and say, this is not going to happen. And the Electoral Commission also, they agree that this is not part of the Constitution. This should not prevent people to use the electronic, and right away that was stopped. So I think the people play a big role in terms of that. And when I mean people, we're talking about the religious organizations, how they always send in messages of peace.
Civil society.
Yes, civil society is a big player when it comes to the success that we're observing right now.
It's very interesting that obviously the road to democracy began perhaps back in 1991, isn't it?
Correct. It's 1991, and Benin has been one of the forerunner, the first one to start democratic practice on the continent.
We'll come to that later. Now we'll pause for a short break, and I would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website, Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Benin President. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away. Benin.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart. And, of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you again, Eramine. Tell us, what makes Patrice Talon, the president-elect, who, of course, is due to be inaugurated on April the 6th, what makes that man tick? He's still a very young man.
Yes, I mean, if you call 57 a young man, yes, he's a young man. He's a young man, and he's full of potentials. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who has, he's the number one businessman in Benin,
right.
And he's the richest man in Benin. And he's the first employer of Benin. And on top of that, he's the one who is really committed to his country.
He actually employs more people than the government of Benin?
Oh, actually, I would say in the private sector.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
He employs more in the private sector. He's a number one private sector employer.
He's a very rich man. Where did he get the money from? Because he seems obviously to have deep, deep pockets. He sponsored, for example, the outgoing president, not once, but twice.
Well, I would say he is rich because he's a businessman. The same way I ask you, Donald Trump is a rich man. Where did he get the money from?
Real estate and what have you?
Well, in his case, he was mostly in the cotton industry.
Mm-hmm.
And the cotton is the number one export product in Benin, agricultural product in Benin. And therefore, he has made his big fortune through that, buying companies and even some companies that were state companies that deal with cotton.
Wasn't he at one time in charge of the ports in Benin?
In charge of?
Ports.
Well,
like the port at Cotonou,
yes,
for example?
Yes, he was. He was, in a way. I wouldn't say completely, I mean, fully in charge of the port, because the port remains part of it, I would say yes.
Have you ever seen, for example, someone who has been head of the port or customs not being rich?
Well, you know what? I wouldn't say that. That's why I'm really cautious when you say he's in charge of the port, because the government is supposed to be in charge of the port. He has some aspect of it, you mm-hmm. know, the PVI, mm-hmm. they call it. He run that program, but not for too long, because he has already made his wealth before having to deal with lead this project. But he was already a rich person before then. He's a business person born.
What does he need to do in order to consider himself a success? Because as I did my research, I found out that, in fact, his work may very well be cut out for him.
That is possible. That is possible. But I am afraid of it. I'm afraid of that. What's happening right now is that we're dealing with a president who is not standing on his own.
Mm-hmm.
He's surrounded by very, very intellectual, and well-versed in the country's business in the country's economy who are around him. People like Kupaki, people like Ablai Biyochane. Those are the people he is surrounding himself with. And in the past, that's what he has always done with his different companies. Talon is the one who always grabbed the great people around him. And I would say, you know, if you can do it yourself, you better find good people around you to make it happen. And that's what he's doing again. He makes sure that he has great people around him.
Very interesting. Chris, you come, of course, from Cameroon. And, of course, someone might say when it comes to democracy, really, if you compare and contrast Benin, Cameroon, Senegal, even Nigeria, actually, these days, you could probably say it's day and night. The difference is day and night.
Well, there's really no comparison.
You live in the same region, really.
Well, it's very telling that, people who historically have found excuses for why they cannot help strengthen democracy in their countries are running out of excuses, because now when we have this conversation, we're not comparing things that are happening between African countries and countries on other continents. We're talking about positive, very nice developments on the continent itself. And I think that today, as we celebrate Benin, a lot of Africans in some other countries must mm-hmm. be asking themselves, if it can happen in Benin, mm-hmm. why couldn't it happen in our own country? Mm-hmm. And I would say that most of the Central Africa sub-region mm-hmm. hasn't seen the kind of positive political development that we've seen in West Africa, for example. And I think part of this has to do with the Beninese people taking ownership of their democracy. Because let's not forget, the democracy, even in Benin, has been challenged a number of times. You know, this was the first country to launch the national conferences as a way to have smooth transitions from one-party state and military rule to democratic governments. This was a country where Kereku at one time threatened to modify the constitution so he could extend his stay, and Beninese civil society came out and said, no way, it wouldn't happen, don't touch our constitution. This is a country where, at one time, even President Boni Yayi was suspected of thinking about tinkering with the constitution, and the Beninese people said they wouldn't allow this to happen. Yes. So the people in Benin have taken ownership of their democracy, and I think it's wonderful to see the diversity that's emerging from their leaders. They've gone from a former military leader to a former World Bank senior official in Soglo. To another West African banker in Boni Yayi,
yes,
and now to someone from the private sector. And I think that diversity is by itself very invigorating, and Benin really is leading the way in many, many different fronts.
There are, in fact, a lot of people who say that you do not expect somebody who has been, for example, a senior military officer, frankly, to transform himself into a Democrat. And it looks like basically Matthew Kareku accomplished that.
Well, he surprised
from a dictator, really, to a Democrat.
He surprised a lot of people. And I think he was able to go with the win. And, you know, in Benin, people refer to him as the chameleon, because he was able to change his colors to adapt to the changing winds of the 21st century. And I think when he left power, he was well respected for that and for the contribution that he'd done to consolidate democracy in his country.
May he soar, of course, last in eternal peace, because he passed away recently.
He passed away, yeah.
Very interesting. Right. Again, when you look at Senegal, here is Macky Sall, a president, of course, who defeated another president who had wanted to shift the constitutional political goalposts. And this is a president, in fact, who has decided that 7 years for a term is simply too long. Yeah. It should be cut to 5. And yet, when you look across the continent, you have people who are saying that there should be no need for term limits.
You know, it's presidents like Macky Sall that give many Africans, many of us, hope that the future still will be bright. That, contrary to some of what we're seeing, where presidents that are in their 80s are even still trying to hang on to political power, we have a young president. He's 56, 57.
You're talking 80s. So what about 90s? You're talking about Zimbabwe, Robert Gabriel Mugabe.
In their 90s, who wants to stick to power? And we have a young president who is dynamic, well-educated, who could still have wanted to stay, who has come up with a lot of constitutional reforms, including reducing the presidential term limit and making sure that it's 2 5-year terms going forward. And that's to be commended. He's even reduced the powers of the executive branch and has increased the powers of the National Assembly to make sure that there's an equilibrium, a separation of powers, and proper legislative oversight of our executive authority. He's strengthened the judiciary so that members of the Supreme Court are not just appointed by the executive branch, but more members are appointed by the legislative branch and other professional associations. So this is very uplifting, and I feel like an African that, you know, the dawn, we're getting close to the dawn for democratic governance on our continent.
Very interesting. What about a young American president in the 1990s? I'm talking about Bill Clinton, who was also, in fact, a former Oxford Rhodes scholar to boot, with his cast, of course, of supporters. I'm talking about Secretary of State Madeleine Albright and Susan Rice, who was in charge, of course, of the African continent, who identified 5 African countries where they said that was the future for African democracy. They, in fact, said that Eritrea, Ethiopia, Uganda, Rwanda, and DRC, these were beacons of hope for African democracy. These were, in fact, a new bleed of African leaders who, according to a lot of critics, have actually turned out to be a new bleed of African dictators.
Well, I should say, first of all, that Madeleine Albright is the chairman of the board of directors of NDI. Mm-hmm. And I think she's very committed to the continent and especially to issues pertaining to democratic governance. But what happened in the 90s, I also think there was an effervescence about things that were happening around the world. The Berlin Wall came down. And even in Africa, apartheid was ending in South Africa. Nelson Mandela was coming out of jail. There was a lot of effervescence about the continent. And it could have been very easy in that fog of all of the things that were happening, the good things and the not-so-good things, for policymakers to make wrong projections about the future. And I would say now in hindsight that picking those 5 leaders at the time and thinking that those were the leaders for the future of Africa was a big mistake. And I'm sure that if you talk to those policymakers now, even they would admit that it would have been wrong to bet Africa's future on Isaiah in Eritrea or Kabila in the DRC at the time, or Museveni or Kagame and the former leader of Ethiopia. Now new leaders are emerging who are really committed to the continent's future and who are putting in place systems that can endure even when they are no longer in power. And I think that's really the test of leadership, the ability to put in place processes and systems that can endure even when you're no longer in power.
But what does that say about the people, in fact, who live in those 5 countries? Eritrea, Ethiopia, Uganda, Rwanda, and DRC.
Well, it says to them that ultimately they are going to have to do like the Beninese and the Senegalese and other Africans who've taken ownership of their democratic processes, and that sometimes projections by policymakers from other countries, even if they mean well, even if they're friendly countries, ultimately are not going to be the determining factor in terms of what happens in those countries with regards to democratic governance.
What about the role of development partners?
Well, they definitely have a very strong role to play, but they have a support role. And we've seen, even in a case such as Benin that we're celebrating today, that the absence of international observers did not stop the Beninese people from deploying their own observers to monitor their own elections. So increasingly, Africans are taking their own affairs into their hands and realizing that development partners are partners, but first and foremost, the ultimate outcome is going to be determined by us Africans.
They did the right thing, and of course, part of perhaps the explanation is because you have Benin or Senegal, where they don't think in terms of strong men, they think in terms of strong institutions.
Exactly.
Very interesting. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, but first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka, and I always say that it's all about the West African food, so maybe we should start importing some of our foods in some of these countries. But still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from you through social media. But now here is our letter of the week from someone who responded to our question of the week.
Patricia Namdi from Kamuli in Uganda writes, Benin, like many African countries, faces a number of problems and the new president has to find an immediate solution. These include corruption, poverty, discrimination of women and the disabled, female genital mutilation, unemployment, land issues, weak education systems, and poor health. Addressing all these problems will help the people of Benin have a better standard of living.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them, today, not tomorrow. So let's connect, let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies.
Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known.
It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. As mentioned earlier, Prime Minister Lionel Zinsou of Benin has conceded defeat to businessman Patrice Talon in a second-round runoff presidential vote. The small West African nation joins many other African countries in respecting term limits of their constitutions and hopefully moving forward with the process of peaceful political transition. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what would you like to see accomplished by Benin's new president? Well, before we begin, I'd like to thank you all for using all our social media platforms to speak directly to us. Another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOABeninPresident. And if you haven't yet, do follow us on Twitter at VOAShaka. Speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Emmanuel Kachele, who tweets, I'd like to see Patrice Talon lead the Beninese well and to ensure a smooth power shift. Well, let's now turn to our Facebook followers and go to a post from Chindefu Aubrey Kasunu from Zambia, who writes, democracy should be the rule of acceptable laws of the land, such as free press, freedom of association, access to basic public welfare, health, education, and other infrastructure provided by many current governments. It should not be the rule of the majority. Well, a range of opinions here, Shaka, and guests, your take on this comment.
Very interesting, Ermin, your reaction to that.
Well, I totally agree with some of the tweets, especially was related to the candidate who is supposed to be trying to have a better life for the Beninese. You know, we are applauding today the successful transition to another government. But in the meantime, there's still some issues that we have to face. Some issues related to women, for example, issues related to entrepreneurship and so forth. And those are really issues.
What about education?
Education, that's a big one too.
Healthcare
is important. Healthcare system, you know, is big. Those are big issues. We need social issues that we have to deal with because we haven't made any bigger progress when it comes to healthcare or education, for example. You know, we should still that even though education is free for primary and for girls, we still see that the gap between boys and girls is huge when it comes to education. When it comes to the healthcare system, there's a lot that needs to be done. And that's we notice that with when we have the Ebola crisis, we see how Africa is lacking a lot in healthcare infrastructures. And same for Benin, the healthcare infrastructure is lacking. And he has a lot ahead of him to accomplish.
Mariama? Do we have any more feedback, please?
Absolutely, we do. Let's go to a comment from Bishop Bosco Wambi. He's writing from right here in the United States, from Texas. He says, democracy is the best way of living in politics. So thanks to the current president of Benin. And let's pray for Uganda also to join the democracy movement. Sure, you'll have some things to say about that one. While we're at it, let's take a look at another Facebook comment, this time from Yahya Ahmed Gumel from Jigawa in Nigeria, who writes, as election anxieties and desperation are over, the newly elected president should, as a matter of urgency, take the necessary steps to ensure effective and efficient services are delivered to the electorate who gave him the mandate. Social issues and problems such as poverty, unemployment, corruption, health, and education should take center stage. He should make justice, accountability, and transparency his philosophy. Well said, Shaka. And guess once again, your take. I'm sure we addressed some of these issues earlier, but it looks like that people are already looking beyond the election results and trying to figure out what should the president do.
Chris, what about that? Does Tarun, in fact, have the vision thing, apart from making money and having deep pockets?
Oh. Well, I think, you know, when you've run a business and you've run it well, you start up with a lot of things working for you in terms of being able to run a country. And I would say that if you look keenly, maybe even one reason why some of the transitions have been very difficult to sustain on the continent is that you've had people who have been civil servants, public servants, all their lives.
Who never had a job.
Who never really applied for a job. Yeah. No. Who never knew how to reconcile competing interests. No. Who all of a sudden are thrust into a position of power and then asked to govern millions of other people. But if you have someone who has been in the private sector, who has been a businessman, who has negotiated difficult transactions, who has been involved in international issues and domestic issues, who knows the plight of ordinary workers because he's had to employ people, there's a good chance that he would do very well. And I think if he may just have to start with maybe creating a blind trust in which he can put all of his private investments so that he can make a distinction between his private investments and the public goods that belong to the state and the Beninese people. But I'm confident the way he's run his campaign, the way he's been able to get people around him. And, you know, he went up against tough competition.
Correct.
The incumbent head of state was
Correct.
Not in his favor.
Correct.
The incumbent speaker of the National Assembly was not with him. And yet he was able to rally ordinary people to get their votes. So I think he has something in him that can make Benin succeed and can make him succeed as a president.
But why was the incumbent president against a man who, in fact, supported his campaigns not once, but twice, in fact, was the chief financier of his presidential campaign in 2006 and 2011, last time I checked?
Well, my sense is that in the next few years, we'll probably have more of that story come out between a family feud, I would say, between two individuals who know themselves well. But now it could very well have been that they disagreed on the whole issue of constitutional term limits, because that was what Patrice Talon said, that he didn't think that the president ought to amend the constitution, and that was the reason for their falling out. And now that we see that Patrice had political ambitions of his own, that may really have been the reason. But I'm hoping that with the Beninese having come out in an electoral process that was viewed as peaceful and very credible, indicating that they want to move their country forward, that those little issues will be resolved quickly and not allowed to interfere with the governance of the country.
We should point out, of course, in fairness to incumbent President Yayi Boni, he alleges, of course, that Patrice wanted to poison him.
Well, yeah, that was the allegation, and it's always difficult to get to the bottom of these things between family members or friends, because they really were like family members. But my hope is that the Beninese people have now spoken. To Boni Yayi's credit, he hasn't tried to interrupt the process.
No.
The Prime Minister, Zinzu, has been gracious in conceding defeat. President-elect Patrice Talon has been also very very humble in accepting all of this recognition from the Beninese people.
Right.
The country is really poised to move forward, and I think that's where everyone should really be focusing at this point.
I see. Well, thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thank you. And that will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. If you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder, the show is also streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the empowerment of women. Join host Shaka Sally, his panel of guests, and me, Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter, as we talk about women in politics. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. And today, of course, we are talking about the significance of Sunday's Benin's presidential runoff. Could this be the beacon of hope for African democracy? Our distinguished guests are Ermine Zosongubo, founder of the African Immigrant Organization, and Christopher Fomino, senior associate and regional director for Central and West Africa at the National Democratic Institute. Well, again, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say again that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure.
You're most welcome. You know, my sister, there was a very important date in African history, and that was March 6, 1957. The place was Accra, the capital of modern-day Ghana, and the founding prime minister was the Osagyefo, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah. And he said, facing the challenges, that the independence of Ghana would be meaningless unless it was linked with the total liberation of the rest of Africa. He did not simply talk the talk. He, in fact, walked the talk by providing the necessary tools so that the other African countries could also join the same league. Do you expect, for example, a man like the president-elect, Tulo, perhaps to pledge really to at least the sub-region that the democracy of Benin would be meaningless and it was linked with the democratization process of the region or the continent for that matter. And not only talk the talk, but in fact walk that talk so that the region and Africa can in fact walk the walk democratically.
You know, he is, Talon is the man of his words, and he's very, very committed to the success of not only his country, but also the continent. Mm-hmm. He has businesses on not only in Benin, but mm-hmm. elsewhere on the continent. And I believe that he will make that happen, and he's already taking steps toward that.
Mm. So Nigeria, in fact, might need a Dangote.
Well, you know, Nigeria already had Abiola.
Yes, Masud Abiola, of course.
Yes, 1992. MKO Abiola was one example of someone coming from the private sector.
Yeah.
But to add to what my sister just said, you know, West Africa is now in a very interesting situation where out of the 15 countries that form the bloc of West African countries, ECOWAS, 13 heads of states have been in power for less than 10 years. There's been a real renewal of political leadership in West Africa. There are mm-hmm. only two presidents that have been in power for more than 10 years or more than two terms. The rest of the 13
and that is,
have been in
Yaya
power.
Yaya Jammeh and Yassin Bey of Togo. And those are the two, son. In fact, those are the two presidents of those two countries who are against a suggestion by ECOWAS to institutionalize term limits.
Exactly. But it's to say that 13, the other 13, are leaning in the right direction. So I think that's something that West Africa can share with other parts of the continent to say that the renewing political leadership is a positive thing for the country. And it's also one sub-region where we're seeing people from different backgrounds getting into the political arena and playing a positive role. And I'm very pleased to see that today, as you travel through other African countries that are dealing with difficult transitions, Congo-Brazzaville, Congo-Kinshasa, Burundi, you find a lot of West Africans who are working in those countries, sharing experiences with political and civic leaders in those countries. And I think that's a very positive development.
But what about, in fairness to advocates or supporters of no term limits, like Uganda's Yoweri Museveni, like Zimbabwe's Robert Gabriel Mugabe, in fact, who says 2 terms is like 2 weeks.
But that's
wrong. It's not enough to accomplish anything.
That's wrong, but the thing is that they're just using power as their family home. Power becomes juicy, mm-hmm. but they need to learn that it's not by, being there for their whole life that will make the country prosper. Because we're seeing a lot of economic development going on the continent. A lot of things are moving on the continent. And people like that, are they really doing democracy? No.
Are their countries, in fact, developing?
Are the countries that developing? That's the other question. Is all the money going to the family, their own pocket? Yes. So that's a big aspect of things that we need to look at and say, are we really doing? Because democracy is for the people. Mm-hmm. And they're taking all the power to themselves and to their family. I don't consider that democracy.
We'll come to that a little bit later. A reminder that you're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook, keywords Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githu Ewart, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, which is coming to you live from Washington. Yeah, Chris, they are, again, supporters of no term limits, who cite the example, of parliamentary systems in Europe, of a parliamentary system in Singapore, where Lee Kuan Yew was prime minister for 31 years. But when you look at the 31 years that Lee Kuan Yew was prime minister and the parliamentary system, of course, you can also see the results. He was able, for example, to develop his city-state from a poor third world country to a first world. And this is also a country, for those who talk about having ethnic differences, you also had the Mali, who were the majority, very underdeveloped. You had the Indians and the Chinese, of course, of whom he belonged to. But he was able to come out and work with the Malis so as to help him, so that both can help develop Singapore. And that was able to happen. So what happens to Africa, especially a country like yours, where you have had one president, if I remember correctly, since 1982? Is that correct?
That's correct, and it's very sad. Mm-hmm. I think you've just made the case for why a lot of these autocrats are swimming against the current of modern-day Africa, because they can pick and choose little things that give them comfort. you know, they can pick out the parliamentary system. But at the same time, they're putting in place strong presidential systems with a lot of power concentrated in the hands of one individual.
Correct.
But ultimately, they're swimming against history, and the younger generation of Africans want to be governed differently. And ultimately, at some point, as we saw in Burkina Faso, you know, people are going to rise up to ask for the political space for them to be able to contribute to the development of their countries. And I would hate for a situation where some of these leaders would find themselves, as is the current case with Blaise Compaoré, who had been in power for close to 3 decades, but now who is without a home. And that's not what we ought to be seeing of our leaders, and they ought to recognize that they're swimming against the tide of history, and they should create the environment for young Africans to contribute positively to the development of their countries.
The longest-serving president, at least so far, is, of course, Equatorial Guinea's Teodoro Obiang Nguesso. But when I met him last time, I frankly didn't get the sense that this man was enjoying his position. It looked like he was, in fact, enduring.
You know, a couple of years ago, the National Democratic Institute, NDI, convened a meeting of 17 former African heads of states in Bamako, Mali, to discuss political transitions on the continent. And this way, former African heads of states were respected, who had made a positive contribution to political developments in their countries. And it was a fascinating 4-day, high-level panel discussions where these leaders were very frank. And they really wanted to convey the message to their peers and to other African leaders that it's life after statehouse, and that you, once you've served your country well, you can leave power and you can enjoy your children and grandchildren, and you can go around and relax and be healthy and happy rather than stay in and look like you hemmed into a situation where you're not enjoying it and the country, you're not also allowing the opportunity for your country to move forward. So when you see former African leaders, you know, involved in peacekeeping negotiations, mediation efforts, election observation, public health campaigns, it's wonderful to see. And I think that's the kind of message that we should be conveying to the half dozen or so sit-tight presidents who are still holding on to the hem of power in their countries, even though they've outlived their usefulness.
In fact, I met two distinguished former African presidents in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, about a month ago, who had gone to observe elections there. It was the man from Abeokuta himself.
Of course,
General Olusegun Obasanjo, retired, but certainly not tired.
Yes.
And there was a former Zambian president, Rupia Banda, a great man, of course, who conceded defeat,
Absolutely.
An incumbent president,
Absolutely.
Conceding defeat with grace. Absolutely. These guys were there, they were enjoying themselves, and were just talking, and they were enjoying their life.
Absolutely, and that's the way it should be. Okay. That's the way it should be, and a lot of them could write memoirs for the younger generation of Africans. They could create foundations and talk about leadership for young Africans. They could do wonderful things and help us give us our dignity and a place of pride with other continents of the world, where we can say, you know, we are not a continent where we have to fight and kill people over political leadership. We're a continent where leaders serve their time and then move on and then continue to make a contribution to humanity.
So what do these presidents fear, really? Again, we're talking about Teodoro Obiang of Equatorial Guinea, who actually runs the country like a personal farm. In fact, his son is his vice president and what have you. You know the rest of the story. You can go down to Angola, José dos Santos, who is now saying that in about 2 years' time, he's going to call it a day after 40 years of being a presidential monarch. And of course, when you look at the development, there's almost nothing there, really, for the majority of the people. Then you go, of course, to Zimbabwe. You know what the story is. You go to, of course, Cameroon. You go to Uganda, and you go down to Sudan and a lot of other countries, including, in fact, Congo Brazzaville. Now it is called the Republic of Congo, with all the oil and all that kind of stuff. Very little, very few people, really. And yet, it is like the epicenter of poverty in Brazzaville. Any particular reason why these people hang on to power? Is it because perhaps their positions have probably made them commit some crimes? That they fear that if they leave State House, they have no immunity, they could probably end up somewhere in prison or something?
You know, that as well, I would say that as well. But the most important aspect of it, as I said earlier, is more, the power is juicy. You know, people want to be there because once you get the power, you get everybody, you get the power over all your civilian, all your people. You are the power, most powerful human being there at the time. And it's really difficult for people to just step down, even though they have already acquired the most wealth to themselves and their family, they still believe that, because that's what they have known all their life. That, and it's difficult to be detached from that. And I believe that's where the youngest generation, the civil society, should get up and say, it is time for those people to go and retire. And, you know, and let the place for the younger generation to come up and make improve things for the countries.
There are a lot of books that have been written by people who have tested power. And some of them, in fact, call it an illusion. It is something, frankly, you can't control. Mm-hmm. The Chinese have a saying about fame, which says that men dread fame.
Correct.
Just like a pig dreads fattening, mm-hmm. for both could be a prelude to slaughter.
I totally agree. That's the way it is.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we can end this program where we started on a happy note with Benin, to say that, you know, by 1990, there were only three African heads of states who had relinquished power. That was Julius Nyerere of Tanzania, mm-hmm. Leopold Sédar Senghor of Senegal, uh-huh. and Ahmadou Ahidjo of Cameroon. They were the only three. Now, 20 years after, a lot more African presidents have relinquished power, either because they've been term limited, or mm-hmm. they've lost elections and accepted the outcome, mm-hmm. or they voluntarily, like Nelson Mandela, decided not to seek re-election. So the tide is going in the positive direction, and we're now counting not 50 or 51 presidents who are sitting tight, but half a dozen autocrats who are still sitting tight. So the tide is moving in the right direction.
Right.
And my hope is that as the continent continues to get awareness, mm. as civil society continues to speak out, that we would make the message clear to all of these leaders that when your time is up, it's about time to leave. And then we can urge the African Union, you know, which is the continental body, to say that presidents such as Macky Sall, such as Patrice Talon, and other younger leaders should take this debate into the African Union, and to say that if the African Union has a charter on democracy, elections, and governance, which is a very progressive document, it should make sure that it's respected by all of the African leaders.
But how is that possible when, in fact, the African Union has no sovereign status? You know, well, as well as I do, that the African Union really is a reflection of the sum total of its membership. And the sum total of its membership, you know what it is.
Well, you know, it's you know, with this 54, a conglomerate of 54 leaders, sometimes it can be very unwieldy and difficult to make decisions. However, having been entrusted as the continental body, and having had the courage to put in place its own mechanisms, they should enforce what they've agreed upon. That's, you know, because we are, as Africans, are tired of people coming from other continents to give us lectures when we could do these things ourselves and make our continent look good for it.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Haramin Zonzongbo, founder of the African Immigrant Organization, and Christopher Fomignon, senior associate and regional director for Central and West Africa at the National Democratic Institute. Thanks to our field stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.